Good morning, Andreas. How are you today?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Jenna. Thank you
Fine.
for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. And as you know, this is our True Tales from Harrods, and this is our leadership series. So really trying to get to know the person behind the leader. And as someone that has been a part of our management executive committee for numbers of years as our CIO, you're soon to move into our COO role on the 1st of September. Which we'll get on to, but I'd love to know a little bit more about your role as CIO and I suppose sort of understanding where your love from technology came from. I assume that's something that started earlier
Yeah,
on in your career.
started when I was 10.
Oh, wow.
So my father had his own electrical retail business. So I used to get all the gadgets, love film because I had my own video and TV as a kid. But one Christmas, he brought me home a BBC Micro.
Okay.
So back then, you had the Spectrum, the Commodore 64,
Right.
or the BBC Micro. And a lot of the schools used to use them. But when he brought it home, it just had a book with it called Basic, no games. So I set this up and started reading the book, and then realized that the language Basic, I could start building my own games.
Wow.
So by around 13, 14, I was kind of making my own games and then just loved tech. Then I went to university and did a computer science and business technology degree. And then I was hooked.
That's
So
amazing.
my first job kind of took me into, it was an IT graduate placement in the Lloyd's reinsurance market, where I was a business analyst, did that for about a year. And then I joined Lidl as a project manager for retail systems. So I've just kind of spent my whole career
In
in IT.
the tech sector.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating because you must have had sort of something in you that is your brain must be wired in a certain way. You don't just pick
Yeah.
up a computer and start coding.
Yeah, no. I wasn't gifted with any talent with sports. I can't play a single music instrument and I don't ever try to sing. But when it came to tech, I was able to absorb technical information with ease. Some people say that with languages, it's quite similar where people can speak multiple languages. For me, I can pick up any type of technology at pace and then retain and understand it. And then over the years, what I think has enabled me to work across the business is I'm then able to translate it in a way that makes sense to everyone else.
No, I've witnessed you do that. So you do, you're at that ability to sort of almost layman terms it to the people who aren't technically brained. That's such a skill. And out of interest, when you then moved into a more kind of leadership role, I heard you say things like, I'm not now, I'm not in the detail of the technical side. I have experts within my team that are, are far more proficient in that. But how do you sort of balance that? Because I presume you need to have some level of technical ability to be able to lead people who do have
Yeah,
that.
I mean, in the first sort of certainly for the first 10 years of my career, it was hands-on. So we didn't have data centers, you couldn't outsource, there was no cloud technology. So in my early years in the Lloyd's market, and then when I was with Lidl, we used to build everything ourselves. So I had a good foundation, but the key is research. So across all the areas, I have to research. So I go to Gartner, I read, I go to different panels and different exhibitions, but I'm always learning about the technology. So I don't know how to implement it, but I know how to converse with my team to challenge all of us in thinking what is the best technology for us to use. But you have to constantly research.
But it's such a far, particularly right now, okay, it must be so fast moving that what you learned yesterday might be different today.
Yeah, I think AI has, I mean, technology has significantly changed in the 30 years I've been in it. I remember at university, we used to use WordPerfect and Lotus 1-2-3. That was the equivalent of Excel and Word. And that's what we all focused on. And then I left university, went into my first job and had Office and had never ever used it. So I'm kind of used to the pace, but AI is accelerating at an exponential rate. And with all these things, it's everybody fears that we need to be at the front end. Because I've seen it, I'm usually a little bit calmer at saying, right, let's make sure we have all the governance and controls in place. There's a huge cyber threat linked to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of failure. You know, I read a stat that a lot of companies, 80% of the AI that they've put in hasn't actually given any benefits, but a lot of costs. So we just need to kind of take a crawl, walk, run approach to it.
Which I think is a reassuring place to be, because I think lots of people will be listening to all sorts of things at the moment where, you know, by 2027, everyone's job's gone and we're all going to be run by robots, you know. So I definitely see that kind of, yeah, it's great to have that kind of almost reality of how that will happen and how you see that affecting our business.
Yeah, we've always evolved. So it was 10 years ago, they were saying with data centers and software as a service and technology that you rent, you won't need IT departments. Mm. Well, we have more people in IT than we had 10 years ago. And that's because our roles evolve. We, you know, cybersecurity 15 years ago didn't really exist in the size that we need it today. But then we have increased our resources in this domain.
Yeah.
20 years ago, we used to have IT business partners. Today, we have business relationship managers. You know, the BRMs in my team understand the business side and then take the technology and make it relevant and the capabilities that are important to the business. Mm. We've evolved considerably.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're just seen as techies anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'd love to know a little bit more about you and sort of the values that you bring to your team, because, you know, in an IT department in particular, as you said, it moves at pace. It evolves very quickly, and actually leading a team that has to be very adept to change must be quite, you know, a skill and quite interesting to sort of see how it evolves. So as you know, as the sort of the leader, the CIO, what do you think is important when it comes to leadership?
When I look at kind of the Harrods values, being in a fast-moving environment, I think we have to strive to exceed every day.
Yeah.
We don't get to not accept change or maintain the status quo. So striving to exceed in everything that we do is supporting the business, supporting our end customer, but also keeping up to date with the technology. I think it's critical that we build trust as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have a technical skill set where people do put trust in you because they don't understand that environment as much. So if you don't build trust and everything you say isn't factually correct, then confidence will be lost. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that trust is a core value throughout IT, and we also are protecting the business assets. There may be digital assets, but they're still very important.
Sure.
But then me as a leader, my team have to trust that I'm going to support them in understanding that technology does go wrong, that everybody isn't exposed, but instead we're putting the right controls and governance in place that support how we respond back to the business. But at the same time, they feel confident that what I'm steering is the right direction for us, whether it's the technology strategy or the way we engage with the business, is quite important.
Yeah. Okay. Going back to you as a leader, obviously building, you know, a value of trust within your teams, what else do you think, what other kind of DNA, what other values do you have to bring? You talked about strive to exceed. So how does that manifest itself in the day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two parts to what, probably three core parts to what we do as an IT department. We have to build strong partnership with the business so they understand we're not just putting technology in place, we're delivering capabilities. And it's quite key for the business to understand, don't worry about the product. We'll decide on that.
Yeah.
Tell us what it is that you want to be able to support your customers or support your employees if you're HR? What are the capabilities that are key for us? The second bucket is our delivery capability. So we have built an incredibly strong delivery capability over the years. And that doesn't just come from having a couple of project managers. That's building the whole end-to-end infrastructure. That starts with a project management office and portfolio that you can plan your resources and your team have trust that you are allocating them to projects that are achievable and that you have budgeted correctly and the time that you've given to deliver those. So delivery capability is essential. And then the third bucket is what we call our BAU, but this is all around our KPIs and our SLAs. This is when you log a ticket for your laptop, there is a response time and somebody is monitoring that and making sure that that is dealt with in the right time, as opposed to a major incident, which is if SAP goes down, you know, we've got to make sure that within 2 to 4 hours that is fixed and the business is up and running because it has a detrimental effect. So when you have those three areas, it's important that we have the right teams that can spread across those, that we aren't asking the people that all do BAU to also do all the delivery. That's when you start running in problems. So your staff build confidence that you are, the workload is realistic, but the strive to exceed is, you know, I've always been amazed with when people are really, when your teams are really engaged and they believe in the vision and the success you're achieving, we're phenomenal on our output and how much we can do. So, you know, I have heard people say sometimes it is relentless in IT. We're always in that delivery state of mind. We're always doing more, but then that's what makes it exciting. Yeah. So to keep the strong technical skill set that we've got. When I joined 9 years ago, we really struggled to recruit people and in Harrods IT. And I think there was two reasons for that. I think we didn't all have the most exciting technology.
Yeah.
And the second part was we didn't invest in people's careers in the right way, where it was very transparent for people to see that they can move sideways, they can move into business areas and what their career paths are. One of the essential things, even though we are predominantly one store, we're not a global corporation, we have to use enterprise-grade solutions because everything is critical that it runs for this store 24/7. So we do use better technologies.
Right.
This is exciting. That attracts people. Yeah. We've worked on some of the most exciting programs over the years, like our single view of customer, where we brought everything to do with our customers under one umbrella and one technology, which has given us the great capabilities we have with our clienteling capability that Jocasta has, you know, in by appointment and across the wider business. We just had a successful SAP S/4HANA greenfield migration that was led by Mark Emery. You know, Future Retail was an incredibly large, complex transformation. It wasn't just an IT deployment. Mm. It was a major transformation for the business. So when you are working on these things and people feel as well that you will be successful in these, then you attract people. Everybody's excited to be in IT. So it's been a great few years because of that.
I mean, look, as someone that, you know, looks after the TA department, I know how much of a difference that has made, because trying to attract talent, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it's a completely different beast to where we are today, where actually, you know, not only is the offering so much more exciting for candidates, but you as leaders are also, you know, you and your leadership team have, you know, a presence in the market too. And that's, I think, you know, really testament to kind of what you've all done over the last few years. So it'd be interesting to know from you then, what is your career highlight? Like, what, you know, if you look back at all the things that you've done, I know you've been through a massive year, the last sort of, well, last 18 months, 2 years with the S/4HANA project. So is there anything that stands out to you that you think, gosh, that was a great time?
I wouldn't change anything in my career. So would I say they're all highlights? No, there have been many a nights where we have worked 48 hours straight and done upgrades and so forth. But probably two things come to mind when you ask that question. I am incredibly proud of what we achieved with Future Retail.
Yeah.
A greenfield SAP upgrade is one of the most complex transformations you can do, and it has the highest failure rate.
Yeah.
So to be successful in doing that, I'm incredibly proud. I think the second one, and it's not because this was a highlight, the cyber attack that we endured last year is definitely not a highlight. But what I pulled from that was when I see how my department stepped up and how the business supported us at a personal level, I had never seen anything like that in my career. It was just, it was a very tough time. Gave me a different perspective of me as a leader. Probably up until that point, I wouldn't say I'm a functional leader, but it's, I'm not emotional over leadership. You know, we work with great people. We achieve great things. We all benefit from that. But in that time, there was this personal pride when I was seeing people work day and night to protect the business. And they all had that same sense of pride, that same strive to exceed, both not just business values, but you could see it was their core values. And it was just a phenomenal time to work with some of the most amazing people in my team, side by side, day and night. So it's not a highlight of my career, but we did defend the business. We had very minimal impact to our revenue, and the whole business stepped up to support us. So I think, you know, from a personal level, I'm incredibly proud.
And that just goes back to values, doesn't it? You know, like you said, personal, professional, whatever they are. But, you know, in time of crisis, that's when you see the true colours come out. And I think, you know, witnessing that scenario, it was quite emotional, wasn't it? You know, to see people and the way they sort of, did what they needed to do to get the job done. So, yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from that perspective. So let's talk about when things aren't so nice. You know, things like you've said, like hands up, we make mistakes. Like that is the sort of nature of technology. So, you know, are there some times that haven't gone quite as well? Because I think those are so important in leadership. When things go wrong, you typically learn the most as opposed to the times when they go right. So are there some things that have shaped your career because they haven't gone right?
Yeah, I mean, if I go back to my earlier days where technology was still, you were reliant on your own team doing most things. There weren't the same number of consultancies and system integrators that you could rely on. We had scenarios where Lidl, we put warehouses live. And on the day they were supposed to go live, all sorts of things would go wrong. And we didn't have disaster recovery and resilient sites and clustered data centers. It was just the one. So if those servers went down, you had a problem.
Yeah.
But I think what helped shape the way I look at IT in those scenarios is how you manage the business, how you encourage the business to have, well, what do you do when IT doesn't work?
Yeah.
Now, back then, the reliance on IT was not as much as it is now. And we know that if I turn stuff off here, we do tend to stop. There's not much we can do. But then it's how can we make sure that we do have business continuity, we do have disaster recovery, and we've put a huge emphasis on that in Harrods, which wasn't here 9 years ago. So the minute something went down, it wasn't chaos, but everyone was kind of like, what do we do? And the immense pressure. Whilst I think when we come together as a crisis management, people have a better understanding of how do I keep things going?
Yeah.
And I think that's been my biggest learning from when things go wrong, the buck stops with me and everybody's just looking at me to how long will it take you to fix it questions to, okay, we know IT are dealing with it. What can we do to support IT until they get it up and running? And mistakes will be made. We do release things sometimes and we've missed something and then they go wrong. I haven't got a problem with that. You know, we are human beings and we are doing multiple releases. If I tell you on any one day, we're probably pushing out 20, 30 changes a day. And those 30 changes could be an update to Windows.
Yeah.
So then you're pushing that out to 4,000 or 5,000 devices. Yeah. The only thing I won't accept is negligence. When there's carelessness, when people don't follow the governance that we've put around to put more controls. Every change we do goes through a change control board. It's all approved. We risk it. We assess whether we're ready to do it. But if somebody pushes a change out and doesn't go through a change control board and then doesn't follow up to see if everything's been all right, that's where
that's your line.
We have messed up.
What you're describing, though, having that level of sort of rigor and governance behind every change, not only de-risks for the business, but I imagine makes it a much nicer place to work, because there's nothing worse than sitting on, you know, on that kind of level of pressure and feeling on a knife edge all the time that, you know, you know things are going to go wrong, but you've got no plan, you know, to support that.
Yeah, we have people that are on 24-hour shifts, on rotors, on call, but my ambition is never that everybody is constantly waking up in the middle of the night and taking calls out of hours and weekends. So a lot of this is so we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I kind of call it hero culture. I don't want that.
Yeah.
Where IT pop up and save the day. At the end of the day, we shouldn't be having to do that.
Yeah.
We should be behind the scenes, keep everything running. And it should be a very, very calm response to how we, because we understand why something's gone wrong. There are times though we don't know why something's gone wrong. And then we need the right approach. We have our war rooms where we bring the right people in and we very, very quickly root cause problem so we can solve and move forward.
I've heard you talk about when, you know, big things, you know, go live, that sort of as a business we all gear up to that day, that go live day, and then day two and nothing's gone wrong and everyone's like, oh, you know, that sort of level of anticlimax.
I assure you, I don't feel an anticlimax.
Yeah, I know.
I feel a huge sense of relief that I didn't break the business.
Yeah, good. Okay. So obviously now you're moving into a new role as of the 1st of September, moving into COO. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what that will be and what you know, what will now be under your remit? Yeah.
So, you know, we have a lot of core operational areas within our business. IT, as well as being technology-based, is a core operational area that supports the business. Our engineering facilities department have a very similar, yes, they're dealing with heating, electrics, HVAC. But it's still, you implement solutions, you then have to maintain and support those solutions, and then you have to respond to them
things
when they
go
wrong.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have a great supply chain department, and in that comes distribution. We have Knightsbridge. We have our TVDC site. And that is very, very similar as well. You know, that is a 24/7 operation, and things can go wrong there.
Right.
You know, you have a huge reliance on people in that operation.
Yeah.
The other side is security. You know, our security team is probably one of the best security teams I have ever seen anywhere in the world. Our security guards are second to none. Our investigations team are phenomenal. And then supporting them is the health and safety team. So when you look at all of these, they're big operational areas. Some are front facing, some are behind the scenes, but they involve a lot of people. They all have to perform to targets, SLAs, but they all need governance, controls, ways of working. And I think the vision is, if we brought them all together, is there synergies between the departments that we can look at and do in one way? Is there cross-functional skills You know, we already used to work tremendously with security, with supply chain, and with engineering. But now, where we were outside supporting, well, then now we can take a bit more out. So, like when we look at Andrew Luxmore's area in engineering and facilities, this is an area where AI will have a significant difference in building management systems. Before, we had Internet of Things, and these were sensors and devices that sit at the end of monitoring if lighting went off or if heating temperatures change, but then they would just alert. The future of this technology now is AI will actually be able to remedy.
Oh, wow.
So you could have agentic AI that, when you get the alert, will have a level of capability to stop and start it, restart it, which is what our engineers would do. And then it allows our engineers to actually look at, well, why do we keep having this restart? Why is it constantly doing that? And then have the time to root cause problem solve. And this is some of the problems we have every day, which is, I've seen this in IT, where you constantly fix the same problem.
Yeah.
But if you're seeing the same problem come up again and again, well, how do you block those all together and then create a problem that then you can resolve? And then we could do that across all our operational areas where we bring the right people together. So I think there's a lot of synergies.
Yeah.
I think where I hope to help those those new directorates is by bringing in some of the best practices that I think we've benefited from in IT, but then also learn from the things they do great in their areas that we can embed across the whole operational. I think, you know, it's quite funny where I'm, you know, meeting with finance, meeting with HR, meeting with procurement recently. We've never had to consider, how do we put an umbrella over all of the operations, so we feed all the information up in one direction, so we get a full view of our operational health. How do we heat map that? And it's quite exciting that I've been given this opportunity to drive this.
100%. I was just going to ask you, it must be a really proud moment for you.
Yeah, sometimes I'm quite clinical. I remember Abby said, when the announcement goes out tomorrow, just enjoy the day tomorrow. Enjoy. Just go, you will get a lot of people emailing you and congratulating you and praising you, which I found quite alien. And then I did. So, I am incredibly proud. But I'm also, Harrods has been great to work for, been a great supporter. I've spent a tremendous amount of money, and hopefully it's gone to great use.
We do our bit.
I just think it's a great opportunity across my teams as well, bringing us all together under one operational leadership, and I'm sure there'll be tremendous benefits. That's what I'm hoping for anyway, to the business.
You've made it much clearer to me, actually, just to being able to understand the synergies, actually. I hadn't quite maybe realised that there was so much connection.
Yeah.
So you are our exec sponsor for Clarity on Expectations, which is the next chapter of Everyday Excellence. Now, it sounds like that's going to be a really important part of your new role, because Clarity on Expectations is all about being, you know, clear on expectations, setting, you know, goals that are really achievable, but stretch, you know, people to really develop themselves and their career, but also having that level of honesty over when things are working and when things aren't working. So, you know, going into the new role and having a whole new leadership team and a whole new team of individuals to manage, how important is it that, you know, goal setting and career development and having that level of expectation on people is for you, you know, as in your new leadership role?
Yeah, I've always been a great believer in everybody knowing exactly what the North Star is. So that's a strategic part.
Yeah.
But then what are the tools that I need to get there? And then how do I measure how I'm getting there? So, you know, I don't use terms like SMART objectives and goals. And, you know, what we try and do is there are common goals that the whole department has. So I'd be interested to see whether that works at an operational level across all my functions, or whether we still have to keep them within. But a common goal is, you know, that we deliver the service to our SLAs and KPIs, and that's for everyone.
Across the board.
So the whole of IT then feels a responsibility that we all have to achieve it. So nobody can say, well, I can't influence that. Well, we all have it as a clear goal. Then we have to be a bit more scientific about the goals we set within the departments. I think goals, I am quite data driven. So when we set these goals, can we make them measurable so it's fair? Because if people don't feel that it's open to interpretation, then not everyone buys into the goal because they might think, well, my boss might have a different interpretation to whether I've achieved that goal or not. So we spend a lot of time discussing as a leadership, what are the core goals that we were and objectives we want to set the department. And then once they filter down, we make sure that they're explained. I'm not saying we're perfect. I think we still have a long way to go. But it's where everybody has a shared interest as well.
Yeah.
If you create too many goals that are specific to every little department, I think then you lose the cohesion or bring us all together.
So, you know, going back to kind of performance and being clear with people around what your expectations are and particularly the areas, your new areas, where does honesty come into that?
Well, I mean, if you're going to build trust, you have to be very honest. But there's a way to deliver honesty as well.
Yeah.
So you have to think, how am I going to sit with my team member and explain whether it's underperformance or not hitting targets, or you need to have an honest dialogue with empathy, but also with the data.
Yeah.
So the dialogue doesn't go down rabbit holes because you can't, you've got two people with two different opinions. You need to bring everyone on the same page. I also think if you've created trust, then you should be able to have that dialogue. But another thing we really push within our LT is in the moment feedback. Okay. We don't wait for the 6 monthly check-ins and then you surprise someone.
Yeah.
Because you suddenly go, I'm not happy about this. And yet, for 5 months, they've had no idea.
Yeah.
So the in-the-moment feedback where you sit with a team, and that creates a trust environment, because if people are used to giving the feedback in the moment, it kind of becomes normal. Yeah. It doesn't feel like you're being criticized or attacked.
Yeah.
It just, I messed up.
Move on.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Andreas, that kind of brings us to a close today. So I just want to say a huge thank you. That was incredibly insightful. No, honestly, I think, you know, you probably take for granted kind of all the things that you do on a day-to-day basis. But for lots of us, it's a very different world, you know, to how we operate and how, you know, how we run our day-to-day. So, yeah, listening to that and understanding some of the nuance that sits behind, you know, well, I suppose IT, but also then more broadly operations is really fascinating. So thank you so much. It's been lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.